So this is Jenny Knight interviewing Sean Bigwood at her home on the 16th of January 2015. So I'm just going to ask you a few personal questions. Where were you born?
I was born in Bristol.
In Bristol?
Yeah.
And your date of birth?
I'm afraid it's the 28th of March 1934.
Okay, that's lovely. So where did you live as a child? Did you?
I lived in Ham Green. It's a little village or hamlet just outside of Bristol.
And oh, okay.
We lived there until my parents carried on living there, but
yes.
I lived there until I got married when I was 18.
Yes,
so
yes.
I lived there for about 17 years.
And so what did your parents do with
them? My mother was a hairdresser.
Mm-hmm.
My father worked in an office in a big wholesale warehouse. He was their chief cashier. My mum ran her hairdressing business from our front room.
Oh.
And she had two helpers initially. And had quite a thriving business. But then gradually the two helpers got married and left, and Mum was left on her own. And all this time I was growing up. By the time I was 16, she had given up completely in the house and was working for a friend of hers who had a salon in White Ladies Road in Bristol.
Oh, yes.
That's the story of my early life.
Mm.
My parents were ballroom dancers, very good ballroom dancers, and no way could I aspire to be as good as them. My feet just didn't go where they wanted.
Did you have lessons then?
No, I had ballet lessons, but not ballroom dancing. Consequently, when years later, I was a farmer's wife, and our milk recorder and his wife ran a folk dance group. And I said to him, I need to get moving. And he said, why don't you do folk dancing? And that's when it started.
So, and then, so obviously you moved away from Bristol.
Yes, I got married at 18 and my husband was a farm worker. He stayed for 6 months. So we moved around quite a lot. And eventually, after our first child was born, he got the sack. He was working for a lady, and he got the sack because he'd be saying things about the lady of the house to the guy who milked with him.
Oh, right.
He was farm bailiff at the time, and this young guy was working with him, and he was sort of using his normal language about women.
Oh, dear.
And the story got back to his boss, and he was told that she no longer wanted his services. At that point, we had nowhere to live, no income, but my parents, my mother having given up the front room as a hairdressing salon, had it as a sitting room, very seldom used. So we were told we could live there, use the spare bedroom. Luckily, the day we moved in, Tony's uncle rang and said he had a cottage behind his house. He had a big garden that needed some work done. And would Tony like for 8 hours a day, 8 hours per week rent, to live in his cottage. So after 6 months, we moved into his, which gave us an acre of land where we had pigs and chicken and a building. And we had pigsty and battery chicken in those days, not as anti as they are today. And we started a little business of our own. And then still no dancing. I was expecting my second child. Second child came along. Living in two bedrooms, it really wasn't going to be suitable for that long. So Tony's father said he would lend us £1,000 to buy a farm. In 1956, we bought a farm. We put down £750 towards the mortgage, and we had £250 to stock the farm. It was a 52-acre farm with a five-bedroomed house, no road in, no water, no electricity, no inside drains at all, let alone toilet.
You had lots of work to do.
So therefore, I still didn't have time to enjoy life. I carried on having children. I had, had several children. And then in 1962, when we had six children, we decided we wanted to expand, and we applied for some tenancies as well as going for owner-occupiers, and we got the tenancy of the farm at Staplefoot's Payne, and moved there in September 62. This is when I met Mr. Golly, I can't remember his name now, a milk recorder, who introduced me a few years later, because in 64 I had our seventh child.
Oh, gosh.
I still wasn't dancing. I was... So it started 65. I went to Taunton Folk Dance Group and started dancing. And there I met somebody who introduced me to Halsey Manor.
Mm.
And this is where the romance with Halsey Manor began.
So that's when you first went there.
And we went. I went there with a group of us on a pre-Christmas dance, walked into this wonderful house, which you felt you were going into somebody's home.
Mm.
Marjorie came down the stairs and welcomed us as if we were part of the family. And Marjorie and Donald were the wardens, they called them at that time. They had started up in, you know, the story of the beginning of Halsey Manor is documented elsewhere.
Yes.
So then we began, my husband was very rude about going country dancing, and the following Boxing Day, there was a dance, and I'd arranged to take several people in the car. And at the last minute, he said he would like to go. And I said, too bad, mate, the car's full. Which made him want to go.
Mm.
He came in and was completely overwhelmed as I was, and he became an avid folk dancer as well as me. We joined the club. It's a meeting twice a month, still going, actually, on a Wednesday evening. And and began meeting other people outside the folk world, outside the farming world. A group of friends materialised. There were about 20 of us. And over the years, we used to go off to dances other places, but always coming back to Halsey, most Saturday nights, and alternate Wednesdays, or twice a month. Full stop at the moment.
So did you, how did you get involved with working? Did you work there? And
no, I was just a dancer. My children were growing up. Wednesday evenings twice a month, and Saturdays occasionally, and then with this group of 20 of us used to go out for dances. They'd come back. We held dances in our barn at the farm, and everybody used to come in for coffee afterwards. It was just a lovely period of life where it was so much fun. We all revolved around dancing. Mm.
And did you learn all the different sorts of dances? Did they sort of teach you?
Yeah, luckily by going to Halsey, because Bill Rutter and Marjorie and Donald were the instigators, Bill was employed by Cecil Sharp House, the English Folk Dance and Song Society, so knew a lot of the top names in the folk world, and introduced them to Halsey and Halsey to them. Mm. So we had names like Nibs Matthews, Pat Shaw. Oh, golly, I can't even remember the names of the so many well-known dancers, callers and bands played there. Mm. And we were lucky enough to be there at the beginning.
Yes. Did you meet, which famous sort of musicians have you met?
Goodness, can you remember? Years. Well, Brian Wilcox, he was quite regular. The Ranchers, he used to come. The Yetis, of course. They were there before they became professionals. We sort of grew up with them growing.
Mm.
And I say, Pat Shaw used to come regularly and take weekends, and he was wonderful. I mean, he's written loads of dances and books, and he was such a lovely man. Taught you the correct steps, but if you went wrong, it didn't matter.
Mm.
And that was, I think, the fun with folk dancing.
Mm.
As long as you're English folk dancing, as long as your body goes where it's supposed to be. If you're in a demonstration team, which we started at Halsey at one period, then you need to be correct.
Mm.
But if you're social dancing, you just enjoy it.
Yes, of course, yes. So how do are you involved with Horsey now? Do you?
Yes, it was golly. In 1988, my husband and I separated, and I needed to do something that a woman could do on her own. And I'd been going to Horsey Club regularly. We had been going to Horsey Club regularly. And I continued to go on my own. And then I became chairman of the club. So got a little bit more involved with the workings of the manor itself. Got to know various people who were on their board of management, which they called the council in those days. And somebody came up to me one day and said, would I like to be minute secretary? And I said no, but I did it. And that was enjoyable. And then they, I was minute secretary for a number of years. And then there was election every 3 years. They have some, they're board of, I think they're 12 now. So three of the board retire every year. So there is an election. And I went on the board, which again was another interesting aspect. Yeah, you learn about the runnings of the manor and the problems. As a dancer, you only enjoyed the atmosphere, the ambience and everything. Mm. But when you get involved in the nitty-gritty, then you find...
Yes, what sort of problems did you come across whilst you were there?
Oh, money. Money has always been a problem with Horsey. Until recently, when we now have applied for grants, but all the years they have never asked for any grants. It's been run on voluntary contributions, which is quite something, really, for all these years. But it was because... and I said this to Paul James, who's unfortunately leaving us, but when he first came, I said, you know, it's been a hidden secret, and there were lots of people who didn't want it to be known more widely.
Mm.
And in fact, a point of just recently, Maddie Pryor, who's a well-known folk singer, gave a concert at Milverton, and Paul had approached her, so she was interviewed by Yvette. And told Yvette that she thought Horsey had died a death because she didn't know it was still going. And, you know, I mean, all these people who were there, who would have been a help to us, just weren't involved.
No, they didn't get included into the running of it.
Yeah, they didn't know it was still a going concern.
Yes.
Which was such a pity. But
did you meet Maddie Pryor?
I did, yes. Her and she was with Tim Price at the time. Don't know quite what it was. I mean, over the years I've been involved with various things like organising dances and various things. And this was an open day and there was a dance in the evening. My husband, who is a very robust farmer who catches hold of a small lady and swings her, swung Maddie Pryor. and I danced with her partner Tim Price, who I also swung. That was part of the fun. I can't think of all the people that were there were just so many.
Yes, lots of comings and goings.
Yeah.
So I've heard that there's a ghost at the manor.
I've never encountered it. We did have during the years. The initial years, in order to make money, they used to hold conferences. Manor was open, businesses and youth groups used to hold weekend seminars or midweek seminars there. Incidentally, Taunton Twinning started because of a visit from a group of German people.
Mm-hmm.
It was with Clark's, the shoe people, they had this. And we went into the library and had a Ouija board going. Now, that's my only experience of anything supernatural. And I can't remember what the results were, but we just did laugh a lot.
And nothing happened, nothing.
No.
Strange happened.
Strange happened, yes, but you know, who was underneath the table moving this thing, we don't know.
Was there anything sort of any happy moments that you remember? Really, sort of happy moments for yourself, you know, when you
Oh, yes. I mean, so many.
Mm.
Just to dance, to have wonderful music and to know how to put your feet in the proper places, lean your body back against your partner and swing.
Mm.
That is just so wonderful.
Mm.
As long as he doesn't release you suddenly.
So you've got to feel confident with your partner. All the partners
well,
be
you
can
all
generally
the way. Tell as soon as you hold them.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, one fun, well, lots of fun things, actually. One day, back in the 70s, Bill Rutter said to me, Sean, you've got a large family. Yes. You cater for them. Yes. How would you like to cater for about 100 people on open day? No, I wouldn't, Bill. But with Bill Rutter, even though you said no, he always got his own way. And in fact, every time I saw him, it increased by 100. We had over 900 people there.
Gosh, that's a lot, isn't it?
And we produced teas for them. Luckily, we did it outside. We had nice weather. We had marquees. I did it for several years.
Mm.
But they were in the kitchen in the manor making scones. And we had plenty of jam and cream, which I had bought.
Mm.
And knowing that if it wasn't used, it could be, for open day, it could be kept back and frozen and used for the manor. So there was always plenty there. And thank goodness we had enough.
Mm. Did you have lots of helpers?
I did. I had a whole group of ladies who weren't folk dancers. They were just friends of mine.
Mm.
And we were there. On one particular day, I remember trestle tables outside the manor and making sandwiches and I can't remember which of the open days that was for, but just lots of fun. That I really remember, something I would never ever have considered I would be capable of doing, but with help, Brian Heaton helped with various things, Dick Musson, who was a baker. He helped with numbers and amounts of number loaves of bread I would need for so many people. did it.
It's good. It feels good, doesn't it, when you've done something like
if
that.
If it's been successful, it's
great. Yes, So the German twinning time, were you involved?
Yeah, what happened... because I used to organise these dances for the National Association of Boys Clubs, the guy that used to contact me said, could I arrange for lots of women to come for a dance on a Thursday evening? Because there were 36, approximately, men, German and English, on a seminar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I've got about 12 women. We have wonderful time now. And during that time, I met up with several lovely German men. And one of them was the leader of a mandolin and guitar orchestra.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Which I had never heard. And I said, gosh, that sounds nice. So the next time I went to Germany, which was later that year, I met up with him, heard the music, met the kids. It was a youth band. And there were mandolins, guitars, one accordion. But it was just so lovely. And I said, would you like to come to England? Stupid thing to say, isn't it? Of course they said yes. Arranged with Bill for them to go to Sidmouth. And it was only, back in January, before August, when Sidmouth is held, that Jan Wilcox, who was the director at the time, rang me and said, Jan, they're a string instrument band. Most of their concerts are outdoors. Inclement weather is just impossible with strings. So she said, I'm afraid we're going to have to say no. So I had to contact these people who had been, were very worried, very upset, not worried. Mm-hmm. But I then said, well, okay, you come over anyway. So in 1977, they came over, 36 of them in a coach, gave a concert at the Brewhouse, the first foreign group. In fact, it was only the second time that the Brewhouse was open on a Sunday. And when they gave this concert, which was wonderful, the English, the Taunton people loved the group. So then the group said, well, would you like to come back? Because they stayed. They had no money. It was a youth group. Mm. They stayed in homes. Mm-hmm. And I was a youth worker at the time, and I'd arranged to put 36 beds, camp beds, aside so that they could go in our barn if necessary. But we found homes for all these people, and it was the host families that were invited back the next year in 78. And that was the beginning of Taunton Twinning.
That was interesting.
It was Kate initially, Koenigswerter and Taunton Exchange. Mm. And then in 92, we became more official. In 82, a deed of friendship with Taunton was organised, which didn't mean anything. I thought that by getting something a little bit official, we might get some help, because we didn't. Again, as with
Halsey, no finance came away. Yeah.
It was all done. My ex-husband financed quite a bit of the postage and such, like phone calls. Mm. And it's still going to the state. They're coming over. And
so, do they go to Halsey now?
No.
Have they ever been there?
No. Yes, they have. And the first few years, we regularly. They gave a concert there, or they played, or we visited. But I think I'm the only original member now, apart from the guy, the German guy, who him and I started it. He's involved over there. I'm involved over here, but none of the others are. Mm. So Halsey to them means nothing. Mm. But I'm still very proud that it was Halsey that started the twinning.
Yes. Yeah, that sounds very interesting. So, and do you keep in touch with the German men that you met?
Yes. In fact, Hermsey, the leader, is very sick at the moment. Mm. They came over last year for the merrymaking, he was very ill then. And I mean, we're in email contact, but I haven't heard from him since before Christmas, when he said he wasn't feeling very well and having to go for tests. Mm. So, yeah. Mm. But, yes, I'm still involved with the exchange. Yes. Say I'm accommodating a couple this year that I have stayed with in their home for several years, and their daughter used to stay with me before I met the parents. So it's...
When she was little, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Mm. So, and whereabouts is their town in Germany?
It's in northern Germany. It's between Hamburg and Berlin. Mm. There's an autobahn that runs along there. It's a little town called Koenigswerter. Very small, much smaller than Taunton. Mm. A lot of their residents are employees of the Volkswagen factory, which is held by Wolfsburg.
Yes.
Which is the other side of the autobahn. And it's a lovely town, lovely people. Yeah, great fun.
Yes, it's very interesting. Yeah. And so these days, do you go to Halsey very often? Or
not as often. Mm. I did go to the club before Christmas. I don't go very often. But I am involved with the shop. Christine Corquet organises a group of us who run the shop, and I'm one of a pair who go perhaps once every 6 weeks, something like that, to run the shop. And every week we meet up at Christine's house at Netherstowey, and we make things. There are some of them that bring their own sewing machines, and they're busy making waistcoats, peg bags, tea cozies, bags for musical instruments, bags for shoes. Mm.
What do you like doing?
I'm the ironer.
Right.
I don't sew.
All right, okay.
Well, not these days.
Yeah.
We make cards. Mm-hmm. A couple of us who are not sewers. There's another one that makes jewellery. It's just a group of eight of us that meet up.
They then have the shop open during the week.
Whenever there's a residential course, the shop is open during that time because there is no shop. Mm. It's all in a cupboard, so it has to be extracted from the cupboard and set up on trestle tables. Generally in the entrance hall. It's hard work. And then it has to be put away afterwards. So it's just held on one of their days. Occasionally, if Christine is resident, she'll keep it on for a couple of days. Mm. But generally, our income is, well, we like to think it's approximately £100.
Do the ladies get paid for their...
Oh, no.
No, so it's all...
You never get paid for anything at Horsey if you're a volunteer. You don't expect...
Not, well, no, I was just thinking of the making of the items.
No, it's all done. I mean, Christine has a cabin in her garden, which is absolutely stuffed full of things, craft-wise.
Mm.
And silk painting and encaustic wax. Oh, goodness me, I say jewellery making. She's got all the... everything there. So we meet up in her, we take our sandwiches, she provides tea and coffee, we do a lot of chatting, and we call it the sweatshop.
Well, that's nice, isn't it? Nice to get together as well. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So have you ever stayed at Horsey?
Yes. Yeah. Oh yes, you need to stay. And I think when I was on the Council of Management, I made, I was determined to stay there, because you need to stay in order to get the feeling of the place.
Mm.
And we've had good times, bad times, rough times, calm times, financial. Several times it's been sort of on the board of going bust. And then somebody has come in and made a voluntary contribution.
Yes.
I mean, people have left legacies of their houses. This is the hold that Horsey has had on people. Mm. I think it's such a friendly place.
And it's got a lovely position, hasn't it?
Oh,
the house.
Gosh, yes. Yeah, nice views, nice and quiet. Walks around. Yeah.
So who owns it now? Who?
It's owned by the Horsey Management Committee.
Mm.
It's a group of people that is forever changing. It isn't owned by any one person.
No. Mm.
It was bought initially by 10 people putting £1,000 each, and the manor cost £10,000.
Oh, did they? Yes.
But then, of course...
They had to spend a lot on it, did they?
No, not very much. Well, I mean, over the years, a lot has been spent on it, but initially, because Francis Gare Wilkinson, who was the previous owner, had... And I don't know what it was like when she bought it, but she adapted it so that she could run art courses. She was an artist. Mm. Several of her paintings are in the manor now. And so it had been adapted for residential use, which made it... Mm. I mean, there was one bedroom, and I think this is one of the bedrooms where the ghost supposed to haunt, has 5 beds in it.
Mm-hmm. So it was like a dormitory then?
That was,
a bit like a youth hostel sort of thing.
It was, yeah. I mean, initially everybody used to go down to the kitchen, you all cleared away, washed up. You didn't cook, there was a cook there.
Mm.
But you, before health and safety and all the regulations came in. We're not allowed in the kitchen now, but we all used to contribute. And the staff, there were paid staff, The warden and his wife, they lived on site. And there was a cook who was paid and a housekeeper who was paid.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else was volunteer.
Mm.
My daughter used to work there during school holidays and weekends when she was at Bishop Fox's. And
So they don't have any trouble in getting volunteers then? I guess it's word of mouth, is it?
I think it's getting, as with most things, it's getting more and more difficult.
Mm.
Voluntary work, there's so many charities around that need volunteers.
Mm.
And of course, being where Horsey is, it's not always easy to get there. You have to be fairly resident. Yes. You have to be a fairly closely resident. You have to be a driver. And, I mean, there is a bus service, but...
Mm.
What's happening there.
Yes. Great. Yeah. So is there anything else that you remember about it that you want to...
Those glorious open days. They don't have them now. When parking was a problem, parking is still a problem.
Yes. They haven't made a car park anywhere else?
No, they borrow fields from local farmers.
Mm.
I think on the days And I can't remember, though I was involved quite a lot with open days when I was doing the teas, I can't remember what happened about parking. I think they had a field across the road, the main road, where they parked.
Mm.
Now they have the one which is by the manor that the farmer lets them have that. And I don't know what the arrangements are, whether it's a financial one or whether, as with usual, with Halsey, it's just given. No, I can't. It's just a lovely place to have been involved with all these years. In fact, at one time, we used to call it our second home. My husband and I would regularly go there doing things.
Mm.
He was on the council of management at one time, and one of my sons said the other day, oh, I remember, Mum, when we had to drive loads of stone over when they were putting in some drains or something. Now, that son is now in his mid-50s, and so that would have been 40 years ago.
Yes. So your husband got to like going there then?
Oh, yes, originally. Yeah, even though he was so... Yeah, he came the first time. Eventually, he said he'd like to come and I have room in the car. He put a suit on, which is unusual for a farmer. He had to have two double whiskies before he left home. And he sat all the evening. He didn't dance at all.
Mm.
But when we got home, he said, "You're right, Chef. Never seen people enjoy themselves so much."
Mm.
And so he started going to the Wednesday club as well. It was.
Did you ever do singing? Yeah, join the choir or anything?
No, dancing has been totally... Mm. And in fact, that was really what Halsey started on, dancing.
Mm.
Luckily now it's getting wider usage by storytellers.
Yes,
and
other crafts and things.
Yes, and singing.
Mm.
Because there's quite... we used to have New Year evening events there.
Mm.
And Donald would don his chef's hat. The big turkey would be brought out onto a... Well, it wasn't a trestle table. It was a table that Donald had actually made in the front hall. And partway through the evening, we would break for this turkey sandwich supper. And then back to dancing until midnight. And at midnight, the chimney sweep would always come into the door and we had singing in the entrance hall up the stairs. And that was when you realised how many folk songs there were that were not just the local ones, which we were introduced to. And because even with the dancers, there was Mae Bradbury from... Willerton, watch it, I'm not sure which. And she did a lot of folk singing. Yeah.
Yeah, some exciting times then. Yeah, lots of good memories.
Yeah, lots of good memories.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Shall we...
How are we doing?
Well, okay.
So. I remember one weekend when... John Kirkpatrick was there. He was a young boy before he became well known in the folk world. And I think it was his sister was working in the kitchen. And we had a dance and everybody who worked in the kitchen, they all came in and joined in the dancing. And then all of a sudden there was a "Help! I've lost my contact lens." Music stopped. Torches were found. And we were all scrabbling around trying to find this contact lens on the floor. Because with folk dancing, you're forever active, so it could have been
anywhere.
Everybody was down on their hands and knees looking for this contact lens. Eventually, the MC said, "Look, you know, I think we've given it a good time. Let's get back to dancing." And as she stood up, it fell out of her cuff. She had a turn-up cuff and it landed in her. Hey, presto.